Moskowitz.
Thank you. Dana's going to talk about linking citizens to science in the interest of education.
Thank you so much. Well, I'm thrilled to be here today. And whoever put together this track was brilliant, because Jack and Catherine's presentation pretty much covers my faith journey, starting out with the conflict as a young person and ending with using BioLogos as an instrumental resource for me as I came to proclaim myself as an evolutionary creation. And I tell everyone that, whether they want to hear it or not, and there are many around me who are tired of hearing it, but I'm just thrilled to talk to you today. I'm going to be giving you a little bit of my personal story, because I think it's relevant to what I'm going to be presenting. And just to set the stage, to give you an overview of what I'm going to be talking about. Can you all hear me in the back? I'm going to talk just very briefly on science literacy, because I think Jack really laid groundwork for that. So, and particularly with this audience, one of the number one rules when you're an educator is know your audience. So I suspect that this audience is very aware of the science literacy issue that we have in science. I'm going to set the stage then, using my story as kind of the template of what many young people deal with when they get into this conflict with science and their faith. And then I'm going to talk a little bit about the arena that I work in, which is in citizen science. And I'm going to use two examples from Ohio that I'm familiar with to give you an idea of what citizen science is, how that particular way of doing science can build trust, and then let's get thinking as an audience, how can we then bring that into the church? So it's integrating that citizen science into our congregations. So science literacy. I like to say that being a science educator is not for the faint of heart. Someone teaching math does not have someone in their, a student in their audience telling them, no, 1 + 1 does not equal 2.
Usually.
but in science, we really have to deal with this. And I actually spent a couple of years teaching at the college level, and I was fearful that that would happen in my classroom. So I was always very, and I was a non-believer at the time, so I was always very cognizant of that and would be careful about what I would say, even as an atheist. As far as the way that science is done, it's a particular type of tool that we use. And that tool must be independent of our religious ideas. It doesn't mean that we suspend being believers, but as far as answering the questions that science can attack, we need to be careful not to put those blinders on that come from our religious background. We're all aware of the poor U.S. ranking in science and technology. An NSF report came out in 2014. Showing that we really are ranking compared to the rest of the world in our science and technology. The internet, I think, is a big component of that. That was brought up earlier. Yet the internet also can provide the information that as a young person, I did not have access to. So it actually has a dual purpose. And I think overall it's a positive thing, but teaching our students how to be critical thinkers is really important. So opinions, beliefs instead of facts, bad information that's being disseminated, so much legislation that's being put out there that's anti-science. And there are a lot of people in the churches who get offended by that anti-science word. But when I use that word, it means that the science is done in a different way than the science community is using. So a really great article I just wanted to direct you to was A Mistrust of Science in the New Yorker, if you want to follow that link. Kind of lays this out. So this was actually a meme that I put on my Facebook. Science performed in the arena of public opinion is not science. And I think that's what's happening, is that public opinions have become so important in determining what the facts are going to be. And it becomes a marketing campaign far more than a scientific endeavor. People are believing what is being put out there as bad information because the scientists themselves who are answering these questions, they don't have time to market. They don't have time to make memes and nice booklets and textbooks and all of these things that are putting out some information that is not supported within the scientific community. So I think it's being aware of that is important. So now I'm going to talk a little bit about my story. The message from my church was so strong that there was two pathways for my worldview. It was either God or, with a capital O-R, evolution. One or the other. Could not be both. And that is so heavily marketed and was, for me, I would call it the interventions. You know, my mother would get concerned that I was starting to learn evolution. It started in high school, and then I went into the sciences. And so I was given materials and sent to seminars. And what I ended up doing was really evaluating how did they do the science? How were they performing? How are they coming to the conclusions? And I can remember writing in the margins of the material, this isn't how we do science. This is a circular argument, but this isn't science. So the creation science that I was being shown was different than the science that I was being taught in school. And because that dichotomy was so strong, I had to make a decision. And when I could not get past Genesis. As an ecologist, I could not get past the Noah's Ark story. That really was a big barrier for me. And I would ask my spiritual guidance, and I would ask my spiritual advisors, well, what about this? My questions were so vast compared to what my sisters dealt with because they did not have to deal in depth in the science. And the responses back to me were, don't question God. Well, gee, that's helpful. I'm questioning whether God even exists. So to not question him was not very helpful to me. And so I ended up having to make a choice. And what I was learning in school was so beautiful, actually, just fascinating, so much more logical, so much more believable to me than what I was being taught in church. And so I just stopped believing. And this is really critical. It was not my science education that caused me to step away. It was what I was being taught in church. And one of the frustrating things now as a believer is that when I tell people that, those closest to me who still are young earth creation, they don't believe me. And so as a believer, when Catherine mentioned about the comments that were made to you and how hurtful that is, imagine those close to you having, although they wouldn't say those words to me, but I know that they think that I am being misled and that I'm following a false teaching. And that's very painful as a new believer, 2 years in, proclaiming Jesus and basically being told that I'm not saved. That's very painful. So I think in pictures. I think a lot of biologists do. And the Lord has blessed me with the ability to take very complex ideas, boil it down to the general audience. So I wanted to do that in this talk, and I was thinking about the two different pathways, the two different paradigms, those worldviews that I was presented as a young person. And I also taught human anatomy for a little while. So I thought about the eye. And if truth is that light that enters our eye, and it needs to hit the back of the eye just right for us to know what truth is. What happens when we either put a filter on or a lens on that makes that truth not hit the back of the eye and is in front, in other words, short-sighted, versus also another lens that makes that go too far? And I think that's what's happening with respect to the culture wars and this creation science, and having young earth creationism filtering their information through the Bible, which means they miss information. At the same time, for the atheistic naturalism, they apply science too much. They believe science has answered all questions. And so that is scientism in another way, in that they look too far as what science can do. So both of these were a paradigm that I spent 30 years believing, until I had a very strong spiritual event happen to me that convinced me that God exists. And I won't go into that particular event, although it's quite profound. But I suddenly discovered evolutionary creationism. And it was literally like a light bulb going off. What? We can have both of these in our life? And it has totally changed my world. Talk about a worldview being turned upside down. But I can say that journey was a scary one. So I am sensitive to those who are reluctant to look at evolution because they've been taught so heavily that if they do that, they will lose faith. So Genesis, a beacon for some, a barrier for others. And so I put this particular passage up there as a reminder to me, because I have seen real fear on the face of those close to me when I start talking about that I am an evolutionary creationist. They are so convinced that if they were to listen to what I have to say, that they will lose faith. And so I'm also always mindful of that, yet I'm also a science educator. So I'm very passionate about science being taught properly. So I have to weigh these two things and am still discerning from the Lord, where do you want me to be sharing my story? At first it was those close to me. I want to tell my family. They got very tired of hearing it. I also felt that it was impacting my relationship with them. And so I have stepped away and I no longer share that amongst them. But I look for other opportunities to share my story because I think I have a very powerful story. I think the Lord will use my story. How, I don't know yet. So, building trust. Interestingly enough, when I taught at a college and I was a non-believer, and I knew that I might have believers in my audience, the graphic here with the two circles was how I kind of explained science and faith. And I talked about a richness of life. I was a non-believer, but I knew that my family, who were believers, got a lot out of their faith. And so I talked about the science in the laboratory. That particular tool is used very differently than how our faith is used. And they can overlap in our minds. They can overlap in venues like this, where we talk about science and faith. But we cannot bring our beliefs from spiritual texts into the laboratory. And that's very important to understand. So the poor science literacy, even improper hermeneutics when you look, at that. So it's respecting the two different domains, their different doctrines, there's different ways of looking. I like to say, I don't use the scientific method when I'm in church, just as much as I don't praise when I'm in the laboratory. They're just different ways of looking at the world. So to build trust, you use something to build the trust, to understand it. And so building trust is all about understanding how it's done. And that's where citizen science, where my background, can come into play. And so I wanted to share briefly with you just a couple of items related to citizen science, for those not familiar. It's basically scientific research that relies on non-professionals, volunteers, volunteer monitoring. The term was coined in the 1990s. It was previously known as volunteer monitoring and several other terms. But what this does is it expands the capacity of the community. And I have seen a real increase over my 30-year career of citizen science being there's some legitimacy there, and that professionals will now use data that is collected by citizens if there is a good education and quality assurance, quality control. So attributes of good science, test everything. And I think this is critical, and I recognize that testing everything, as is talked about in the Bible, we're thinking about testing it for evil, testing it for the fruits of the Holy Spirit. But I think we need to test everything when it comes to what we know about the world and what the science is telling us. And so if something is not inferring correctly, or it's not providing us models that are predictive, then it's not good science. And that's what I was recognizing years ago when I evaluated this as a young person, as far with respect to creation science. So one of the things that I do is work with communities in sustainability and making decisions, community-based natural resource management. The information that goes into that decision-making process must be good information, or you're going to get bad best management practices out of that decision-making. So this goes for us as individuals. Am I going to vaccinate my children? Good information has to go into that. As well as what are communities going to do when they're looking at these best management practices is a term that we use in natural resource. So I'll give you a real quick overview of two of the projects that I'm familiar with and have worked with. The Sugar Creek Method is in the Muskingum River watershed in the headwaters of Sugar Creek. And the community there is primarily farming, agriculture. There is one large employer, which is the cheese factory. In 1998, the Ohio EPA came in and did a study and said that this water is the worst water in Ohio. That message was not taken really well in the community because they essentially pointed the finger at farming, which is a correct way to do it. There is a lot of issues with nutrients coming off of farm fields, and so the science behind it was firm. So Ohio State University investigated in 2000 and decided to come up with teams of community people came together and collected data. And it was from beginning to end, they came up with how to do the collection, collected the data, and even using the citizens in the community, including Amish. And there was a real opportunity to build trust among all of those people. And Sugar Creek, actually, they'll be doing a study plan in 2017. So we'll have a good 10 years of looking at if there has been an improvement in the water quality. Another topic that I work with is citizen lake awareness and monitoring, where we do, it's been around for 25 years. We're looking at trend information, and I manage this as an administrator, and we do trainings. We're collecting primarily transparency information, but now we've started adding some other parameters like harmful algal blooms and chlorophyll A. And then in this day and age of instant gratification, we even have an online database that the volunteers can put their information in and automatically get charts and graphs and pictorial ways to look at their information. So the key part of this is that the building the trust by having them do science is very critical. And I think bringing this into the churches is one way that can address having that trust in science, in the science institution. But I did a little bit of research. It's not happening very much, or at least I don't have my thumb on the pulse of the church community. I'm new to the community, so maybe it's out there and I just am not aware. I saw one article in Christian Science Monitor that talked about citizen science, a couple of other examples of churches who are participating in green practices, putting on green roofs. There's an interfaith power and light organization where they're doing a lot of opportunities to take a look at the environment. And because it's interfaith, they are getting some trust among the different denominations. But as far as doing citizen science, data collected by citizens, organized by churches, I only came up with one example of that happening, and that was at Grace United Methodist. So if you're aware of any churches that are doing this, I would love to hear about those stories. So in closing, citizen science in our churches can be a win-win-win. We can build trust in the institution of science because there is a lot of distrust. Build bridges between the denominations, between the faiths, between the belief systems on Genesis, even. The gentleman that I spoke to at the Grace Methodist, I suspect that he is young earth. If I was to work with him on a project, perhaps we could get into a discussion about science and science literacy. Build capacity for environmental protection. I mean, that really is what the Lord had me doing, even as I was not proclaiming his name, is that I was protecting creation and worshiping him in that way. So how do we do this? Become aware of science literacy, and I think this audience is already aware of that. Partner with other Christians. Again, this is being a science audience. But I think about how can I bring that into my church and maybe collaborating with other scientists that are in my congregation. Advocating for sound science from the pulpit. Evaluating what are the efforts out there. Are there any green gardens going on that you could then incorporate a little bit of citizen science into what they're already doing? Or even just starting a monitoring program within the congregation. And I think about my own church, and there's so much activity that we do for service to the Lord. Habitat for Humanity, feeding the poor. And what I'm not sure of is if there would be that interest, as was brought up earlier, would we be able to interest people in doing science? Is that something that there would be? And I think the real opportunity is working with youth groups. Because I could see youth groups doing a kick scene in the stream and looking at macroinvertebrates. And so there's a real opportunity to be able to do that. So I know you can't read this, it's too small. I just put it on there so when you get to the slide set, if you wanted to have some information about some of the projects that I talked about. And so, you know, I'll end with a passage that means a lot to me. Do not let wisdom and understanding out of your sight. Preserve sound judgment and discretion. Discretion when we're talking to others about this. And thank you very much for your time. Group that I work with is not faith-based. I mean, I've been working with them for 25 years, so
And yeah, I would like to see that happen. How to do that is what I'm not so sure. That's why I'm looking to the audience that understands the churches better than I do. And yeah, how do we do that? Yeah.
One thing we noticed just now before this talk about some citizen science projects, and depending on where you are, the naming may be a bit of an issue with immigration and citizen. Is a sensitive term. That's something
citizen
that
is? Yeah.
wouldn't necessarily occur to me, but
yeah,
may possibly be a consideration in trying to do these sorts of things. That
they're reading. Yeah, and that terminology is fairly new. Mm-hmm. It was just coined, and there are organizations that have started popping up to give support to that, but that's only within the last 10, 15 years that we see that kind of support for this. Yeah.
Well, I know this issue of trust within the church, whether it's really science. I don't know, in terms of the seminaries where they train the pastors, the like you, what kind of education do they provide? Is it the education that's science-based, or primarily is the sort of historical thing that we've always had? Because this is the problem that's going to continue until we get the head of the church, the pastors, the bishops, to really speak the language we're trying to portray. Until we do that, we are trying on our part. As soon as they go to church, they trust the bishops, the pastors, and then our message is diluted from that point.
Yeah.
I just wonder.
Yeah, a side note on a personal issue, I had a pastor ridicule evolution from the pulpit, and that was it. That was like the nail in the coffin to my faith. He made the assumption that everyone in the congregation felt the same way that he did. And he was an older gentleman, so I don't fault him. He was being faithful to his belief. But I think bringing it into the seminaries and talk to our future pastors that this is an issue. And it's not necessarily convincing them that they have to be an evolutionary creationist. But they need to be aware of this so that when a student comes to them and asks them questions, they have the resources, like BioLogos, to share.
Yeah, I mean, for Catherine, I don't know how much you've gone into these, because that could really create an environment where you're really trying, it's like training the teachers.
Yeah.
You can't go and teach something that you don't have. Right? So obviously that could be a point to start with. Because right now I see all this kind of a wheel, we're trying to do this, if the people go to church, the youngster says no. And in the end, we're just fighting this wheel rather than really getting to the head and say, let's try and see if we can get our seminaries, our training for our pastors to really look at this in a modern way.
Yeah, I will say that AAAS has a nice program.
Thank you,
Catherine.
Yeah. There's a program called Science for Seminaries, which David helped initiate before he joined BioLogos. But we provide seed grants to seminaries across the country to help future pastors and clergy members be better equipped. And so there are approaches. There's multi-targeted approaches to BioLogos and other different organizations. And we are aware of that. And please add your voice to, talk to your pastor and, add to that voice. But, we probably have time for one more question for Dean.
Thank you so much for listening to my personal.